I loved the emotional rush of being scared. I still do, of course. I don't go out much to haunted houses, but I still love good, old-fashioned, scary stories.
Listener discretion is advised.
In today's episode, we'll discuss two cold cases that were solved thanks to an innovative forensic tool. It's unclear when the tool was first used to solve a cold case, but one of the most notable early cases happened on December 15, 1995. But that day wasn't a sweet one for 17-year-old Crystal Lynn Beslanovich, who lived in Salt Lake City, Utah. It's believed that sometime between 6 and 8 p.m., Crystal was beaten to death with some rocks. Her body was found the next morning. Two ranchers came across it on the banks of the Provo River, not far from Midway, Utah. Her killer had struck her with several rocks 8 or 9 times. Her face was unrecognizable. It's not believed that she was sexually assaulted. Close to her body were some bloody rocks. Some of the rocks were so heavy it would have taken the killer 2 hands to lift them. The rocks were collected for evidence. What wasn't found around Crystal's body was most of her clothes. Just her socks were found near the body. Crystal's boyfriend had reported her missing the day before her body was found. Crystal had left the motel room where they were staying to go to a convenience store at around 2 a.m., about 16 hours before she was believed to have been murdered. Crystal's boyfriend told the police that Crystal was a sex worker. When she didn't come home, he became worried because a few weeks earlier, on November 23, 1995, a sex worker named Melissa Griggs was found murdered in her car in Salt Lake City. The police never released the cause of death. Griggs' murder was unsolved. So he became worried that Crystal may have been murdered as well, possibly by the same man who killed Griggs. The police interviewed Crystal's boyfriend and learned that she had moved to Salt Lake City from Spokane, Washington, 5 months earlier in July. After talking to the boyfriend for a few hours, they eliminated him as a suspect. A detective called Christine's family, who lived in Spokane. Crystal's stepfather said that Crystal had a rough life. She possibly started doing sex work as young as the age of 12. She also supposedly gave birth to a child that was taken away from her. When she was young, she started smoking crack cocaine. Crystal's stepfather said he felt sorry for Crystal because he felt that she never had a chance in hell. Crystal also had a criminal record in Spokane that went back to when she was just 13 years old. She had been charged with assault, drug violations, prostitution, and auto theft. Just over a week after Crystal's body was found, the police said they put hundreds and hundreds of hours into the investigation. However, they didn't have a suspect. They also didn't think that Crystal's murder was connected to the murder of Melissa Griggs. One of the biggest problems was Crystal's high-risk lifestyle. They have no idea how she came across her killer. He may have been a previous client who lured her into his vehicle. Or she may have scheduled a rendezvous with a client and didn't tell her boyfriend. Or she decided to find a client while she was out. It was also possible that being a sex worker had nothing to do with her murder and she was kidnapped by a stranger who saw her walking alone. So the case eventually went cold. The brutality of the murder haunted the investigators, so it was not forgotten. In 2008, forensic swabs of the rocks were taken and a partial DNA sample of a male was found. But there was not enough DNA to find a match. Then in May 2012, a private crime lab in Salt Lake City used a recently purchased tool on 2 of the rocks. The tool is called an MVAC. It was developed by Dr. Bruce Bradley a microbiologist, in 2002. The MVAC was initially created to suck bacteria off food. It also preserves collected pathogens in a liquid so they can be used in lab analysis. Dr. Bradley's son described the MVAC to his friend, who was an FBI agent. The agent thought that the tool would be incredibly helpful when it came to collecting forensic evidence. So they did a few tests, and they were impressed by the findings. Compared to traditional cotton swabs, the MVAC collected 40% more DNA from saliva on polyester and 88% more from a bloodstain on nylon fabric. The crime lab used the MVAC on two of the bloody rocks found near Crystal's body. They found some touch DNA, which is also known as trace DNA. Touch DNA is small samples of DNA that are left behind by skin cells. Using touch DNA found on the rocks, they were able to create a full DNA profile. It was entered into the FBI's combined DNA index system. In January 2013, they were notified that they had a match. It was the DNA of a 46-year-old man named Joseph Michael Simpson. Simpson was a convicted murderer. On August 9, 1987, Simpson went over to the home of 26-year-old Paul Helminger. Simpson was mad because he wanted Helminger to stay away from his girlfriend. Simpson ended up stabbing him 13 times. In October 1987, Simpson was found guilty of second-degree murder. He was sentenced to 5 years to life in prison. Simpson was paroled in April 1995 after serving about 8 years in prison. About 8 months later, 17-year-old Crystal Lynn Beslanowicz was murdered. Simpson had not been on the police's radar until his DNA was matched to the crime scene. When Simpson was linked to the murder, he was living with his mother in Sarasota, Florida. The sheriff who initially investigated Crystal's murder traveled to Sarasota because he wanted a fresh DNA sample from Simpson. For 4 days, the sheriff and a detective tailed Simpson. Then they saw him toss away a cigarette butt. They collected the butt and compared it to the touch DNA found on the rock. He confirmed what they suspected. Joseph Simpson had killed Crystal Beslanowicz. Simpson was arrested in September 2013, nearly 18 years after the murder. Joseph Simpson went to trial in September 2016. The trial lasted 2 weeks, and the jury deliberated for 4 hours. He was found guilty of aggravated murder. He was sentenced to life without the chance of parole. He is currently serving his sentence in the Central Utah Correctional Facility in Gunnison, Utah. Earlier in this episode, we mentioned the murder of Melissa Griggs, who was killed a few weeks before Crystal. Sadly, her murder remains unsolved.
Here is a quick word from our sponsor.
We take this few seconds off to inform you, our valued loyal listener, about the best health and fitness podcast shows from the Nespod Studios. Join us as we give you the best of the best health and wellness updates you can rely on for the treatment of chronic health problems. Classic functional medicine back to basics health tips and special updates from the best doctors in the United States of America. Check out this health and wellness podcast shows. Explore Health Talk Weekly, Healthy Lifestyle Matters, Excellent Health Digest, Healthy and Free Daily, and last but not least, Weekly Health and Fitness Corner. Also, check out Nasty Boy CC, the truest story never told fiction podcast, for that real life on the go experience with the 27-year-old golden boy, who made our guest invite number one list. He tells us about his story as it happens in real time and in real life. It's Nasty Boy CC, the truest story never told. Go get a load of that happiness, because happiness is healthy as we know it. Join us every week as we continue to provide you the best of health and fitness wellness updates from around the globe. Enjoy the show.
The other case we're going to talk about today also happened in Salt Lake City, what had happened 18 years earlier in December 1977. In early December 1977, 16-year-old Sharon Schollmeyer was living in an apartment by herself in Salt Lake City. Sharon was an independent young woman. She got a job and moved out on her own when she was just 15. Sharon didn't love the apartment where she was living because she didn't feel comfortable with the other tenants. Also, a few weeks earlier, she had been robbed. But she ultimately decided to wait until her lease was up and then move out. On December 5th, 1977, Sharon didn't show up for work, so her employer called her mother. Her mother went to her apartment building, and the building manager led her into her apartment. He stood in the living room while Sharon's mother searched the apartment. She made a horrifying discovery in the bathroom. In the bathtub, which was filled with about half a foot of water, was the nude body of her 16-year-old daughter. Sharon had been blindfolded with a scarf, and her halter top had been shoved into her mouth as a gag. The building manager called 911. The medical examiner determined that Sharon had most likely been raped. Then she was strangled and suffocated to death. Unfortunately, the police didn't have any suspects, and it wasn't long before the case went cold. Over 30 years went by, and the world changed drastically. Luckily, during those 3 decades, forensic science had advanced as well. Also, the MVAC was invented. In September 2013, the police used the MVAC on the halter top that was stuffed into Sharon's mouth. It had been nearly 36 years since Sharon was murdered. Amazingly, using the MVAC, they were able to get enough DNA to create a male DNA profile. It was then entered into CODIS. Initially, a match was not found. Then, just over 3 years later, in December 2016, the police learned that a match had been found. It was the DNA of a 58-year-old man named Patrick McCabe. McCabe's DNA was in CODIS because he had been convicted of sexually assaulting a minor in 1999 in Gilchrist, Florida. The investigators in Salt Lake City were aware of McCabe, but not because he was a criminal. Instead, he was the building manager of Sharon's building. He had led Sharon's mother into her apartment, and he waited in the living room while her mother looked around. He was also the person who had called 911. When the police learned of the DNA match, McCabe was living in Belle, Florida. In early 2017, the investigators traveled to Belle and interviewed him. They confronted him with the DNA evidence, and he confessed. At the time of the murder, he was 20 years old. He explained that when Sharon's apartment got broken into, he changed her locks, and he kept an extra key for himself. He said that he came home on December 4th, and he was in the mood for sex. But his girlfriend was asleep. So he went to Sharon's apartment and picked up a knife. He then went into her bedroom, tied her up, and raped her. McCabe said that afterward he realized what he had done, and he felt like he had to kill her. He brought her into the bathroom where he strangled her and drowned her. Patrick McCabe ended up accepting a plea deal. In April 2017, nearly 40 years after Sharon Schollmeyer's murder, Patrick McCabe pleaded guilty to second-degree murder and aggravated burglary. The prosecution ended up dropping the charges of aggravated sexual assault. In June 2017, McCabe was given 2 consecutive sentences of 5 years to life in prison. Sharon's family said that they were satisfied with the sentence. They said that ever since the murder, their lives have been shrouded with dark clouds, but McCabe's arrest has allowed some sunlight to shine through. They are just happy he won't be able to hurt another young person. They also thought he was a complete psychopath for standing in the living room of the woman he had killed while letting her mother find the body. At the time of this recording, 64-year-old Patrick McCabe is incarcerated at the same prison where Joseph Simpson is serving his sentence, the Central Utah Correctional Facility in Gunnison. No parole date for McCabe is currently listed, but he'll have to stay in prison until he served at least 10 years. So he'll have to stay in prison until at least 2026, when he'll be 70.
This will conclude the episode. Thanks for tuning in. If you like what you hear, please leave a comment and subscribe. Thank you. This will conclude the episode. Thanks for tuning in. If you like what you hear, please leave a comment and subscribe. Thank you.